Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and we're still deciding about Favreau, right? We haven't officially
We don't want him to feel left out. Let's put him in there.
Okay, and John Favreau, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed of over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and the gentleman who just chimed in there is the one, the only, Dan Z. And he and I are recording this on Wednesday, September 16th. So you are 4 weeks into the school year at this point? Is that right?
I am just about to finish week five, actually. And it's going really, really well. I mean, every day there are more and more students that are choosing to go remote because they have the option to do so. But we've got the desks spaced out, still 100% mask compliance, and social distancing is in full effect. And it's just nice to be in front of students and to engage with them.
Well, again, I'm glad again that you were out there doing this, particularly being as passionate as you are about teaching. Well, anyway, folks, some weeks Dan and I sort of stared down the barrel and was like, wow, there isn't a whole lot of Star Wars news. This was not that week, Dan, was it?
Our cup runneth over, full of the child and all kinds of stuff.
Well, all right. Let's start with where you just talked about. We had the season 2 teaser trailer for The Mandalorian drop just yesterday. And by the way, I want to stress here, folks, that there is a second trailer coming. I've been told by folks at Disney we should look for it in, the early October, first week to 10 days.
Wow.
Okay, so let's talk about this trailer. Dan, what did you think?
Overall, I think it's wonderful. I think it's one of the coolest teaser trailers for television that we've ever seen. And it just had a wonderful pace. The music was haunting. There was a wonderful little turtle impression that the child pulled at the end of the thing. Some great action. And most importantly to me, it revealed nothing about plot, but it really sort of encapsulated the overall premise of season one in a very, very short amount of time. And at the time of this recording, it's got 7.6 million views on YouTube.
Barely a blip. No one's paying attention.
That's right.
Okay. All right. I have to say, Dan, I felt compelled after watching this trailer to go back and look at the two trailers that were released for season one of The Mandalorian. Because I wanted to kind of compare to see, it's like, all right, how much am I actually seeing? Or how much are they willing to give away in these things? And it turns out the original teaser trailer for The Mandalorian Season 1 gave away quite a bit. If you click through the thing, I mean, you get to see Cara Dune. It does Moff Gideon. There's Grief Cargo. There's IG-11. There's Werner Herzog, the client. Even Queel the Ugnaught. So it's... The only thing they held back, obviously, was the child. So understanding that the Lucasfilm folks on the television side, particularly when it comes to promotion, they do a lot of hiding in plain sight. There's a lot of stuff revealed up front. You just don't know it's being revealed up front. I know, Dan, you are ridiculously self-disciplined about this stuff. You don't. You look, but you don't go digging for spoilers. But
that's right.
The internet is kind of losing its mind over. There's that one shot on the docks where there's a figure in a cloak observing. And then the crowd moves, and when the crowd parts again, that figure is gone. In a very Jedi kind of way. Have you heard what people are presupposing about who that character might be?
Oh yeah, there are two names that are thrown around, and they're both related to the last few moments of the season finale of Star Wars Rebels, really. Mm-hmm. But you know me, I just think, well, I don't know. That was cool. I have no idea. I'm not going to guess because that just leads to disappointment for me personally. But I understand other people absolutely love this. The only thing I will say is if you see websites or tweets or things like that are authoritatively telling you who these are, that it's confirmed, I can honestly tell you nothing is confirmed until you see it from Lucasfilm or Disney. So don't fall for the clickbait, friends, because that's all that it is. And they're rarely correct.
Okay.
Now, speculating is fun, though. I know some people like to speculate.
Oh, no. I just, you know, it just, there's kind of a Zapruder film quality.
Oh, gosh. It's so true.
You know, just going through a frame at a time. Look, you know, so.
Did you like it? You didn't say.
I enjoyed it. The beat that you were talking about, where the child retreats into his pod. What was so funny is that just yesterday, Nancy and I went to our local Disney store, and we did it right, folks. We wore the masks, we socially distanced, we slathered ourselves with hand sanitizer. But what's kind of interesting is they unlike last year, there's finally merch to support The Mandalorian. And one of the more interesting things they were selling was there is now a perfectly round coffee mug that, you know, basically recreates the child in his hover pod. And, all I could think was this would be perfect to eat The Mandalorian cereal out of. If I could find any, because I'm looking, Dan. You know, I was in my local Target, and just before we did the show tonight, I found out that if I wanted to have it delivered to my home, my local Walmart might help.
Oh, yeah, that's probably true.
But you, on the other hand, you don't have, you know, us commoners actually have to go to the store and get the cereal. You, on the other hand, you want to talk about the box that arrived at the house today?
Yeah, today General Mills had given me a heads up they were sending me something in the middle of the month. And sure enough, I got a beautiful black box with the child on the bottom. There's posters of it on Coffee with Kenobi's Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and on our stories as well. And you open it up, and it's got this cushiony, velvety interior where you pull out the box, and there's this really cool collectible Mandalorian cereal. So Mason and I had it actually right before you and I started chatting this evening, and it's actually quite good. My wife described it as Kix cereal mm-hmm. with a little bit of Lucky Charms marshmallows, and I think it's pretty tasty.
Okay, so the exterior of the box describes it as a fruity cereal with child-shaped marshmallows. Would that be correct?
I think that's accurate. And if it had a bit of a Halloween taste to it, then Drew Taylor would probably be, you know, foot in all the way to the cereal itself.
Okay, folks. We are how long into the show? 8 minutes.
We laughed so hard at your latest fine-tuning when he was talking about all the Halloween candy he's been eating already.
Taunting
a diabetic, yes. What a rude person.
I wave at it from a distance. Now, we were just talking, though, about, again, I went to my local Target and wandered the cereal aisle, and there was, in fact, no Mandalorian cereal. But on the other hand, in the toy aisle, we had the Galaxy's Edge Trading Post, which sadly, my Target had been pretty much picked clean, though there was a really cool Jawa tiki mug that I was sorely tempted by. You, on the other hand, Dan, I think you managed to get there when the thing was fully in stock and did a little shopping, didn't you?
Yeah, I went the first day. I wanted to see sort of the selection that they had. I got a puzzle. I got one of the miniature 3¾ droids. I got an orange and black one because that is our school colors where I teach. So I thought that was fun. I got the 6-inch Black Series Honda Onaka, thanks to a listener, Tyler Pampa. He picked that up for me and got that over to me. And some other fun little things. But yeah, there's a fun thing. I mean, none of it is stuff that's actually sold in the parks, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But it's still fun. I just like the packaging and the logo and just kind of the feel. I mean, anytime they're trying to put a little bit of that kind of fun into the world, I'm a big fan of.
Well, now, speaking of which, it's genuinely intriguing that think about it. We had Disneyland's version of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge open in, what, May? You know, late May, early June of 2019.
Yeah, it was May, for sure.
Okay, all right. And then the Disney World version opened in late summer, early fall. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, what's intriguing about what's going on now is you have Disney and Lucasfilm trying to make Galaxy's Edge Batuu something that lives outside of the parks, which brings me to The Sims. Have you seen this? The Sims 4 Star Wars Journey to Batuu?
I have. That broke last week, and I haven't played The Sims, gosh, since early college. And it's, I don't know, what do you think? I mean, it certainly looks intriguing.
Well, you know, the thing that kind of, you know, I face it, there was a lot of stuff that we were promised, you know, in the year, 2 years, that you know, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge was under construction. How many times did we hear about, for example, that we'd be in Oga's Cantina and, you know, have an angry bounty hunter or an angry smuggler come up to our elbow and chew us out because we had dumped our cargo on the Millennium Falcon. And what's kind of interesting to me is that if you read what Sims 4 Star Wars Journey of Batuu is, finally we get to do this. You know, that players get to choose between three factions: Resistance, First Order, and if they want to be a smuggler. And you can, as you make your way through this area and do various missions, you can actually build up galactic credits, which is the currency that's used in Batuu. But you can go get dinner at Ronto's Roasters. You can decorate, you know, your room in, you know, a Black Spire Outpost the way you want. You can go to a droid depot and build your own droid. And evidently the sort of, when you've really reached, you know, you've really done, you know, this game right and you've completed all the missions, you actually have all the parts necessary to go to Savvy's Workshop and make your own lightsaber. So, you know, I mean, it's a little, it's part of me that's a little frustrated that it's like, what we're supposed to get in the real world, well, we couldn't necessarily deliver, but if I have an additional $19.99 to buy this expansion pack of The Sims, I get to do this.
That Lucasfilm Story Group spent a lot of time on this. They really wanted to get the detail down. They put a lot of the authenticity and some of the wackiness that The Sims is famous for. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I haven't talked to anyone who's played The Sims in a while, but this would certainly tempt me to. I mean, can you only get the expansion pack to play, or is there something else you need to purchase with? I'm not sure.
I think you do need, you know, Sims 4 to actually play this. Now, right. What's kind of interesting to me is on a parallel track, we have the ILM X-Lab project, Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, which, just today, we had that trailer that revealed that Anthony Daniels, C-3PO, is going to be part of this virtual reality experience.
That's right, and they also said that Yoda's going to be involved too, which I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around how that would work story-wise, but interesting.
Speaking of the story, the setup for this is you are a droid repair technician that crash lands on the planet Batuu, and you make your way to Black Spire Outpost, and as you step into a cantina owned by a character called Sleazelstack, he tells stories which eventually, as a result of these stories, you do at some point come, you know, face to face with Master Yoda.
Sleazelstack is voiced by Bobby Moynihan from Saturday Night Live, too, by the way.
That's right. Who does, by the way, some wonderful work also on the DuckTales reboot.
Yeah, and Star Wars Resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, the love his work. But again, it just, you know, we have the same sort of situation where, by the way, I want to be fair here. The folks at Oculus Quest have yet to release a price point or a release date for this project. But the fact that, you know, we got the trailer, you know, and they're continuing the promotion, it's imminent, you know, or so they say. It just would be nice to know when. And speaking of things people would like to know when it's going to open, the Star Wars, Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel at Walt Disney World. Work is continuing on this project. In fact, Disney CFO, in a recent meeting with the investors, made a point of saying, yes, this is still coming, and, we're really looking forward to this. And I don't know if you heard the recent Disney Dish, Dan, where Len unearthed a patent that's going to be used in this hotel, where you're going to be wandering the corridors and a droid is going to, come at you and realize you're in the hallway and, literally stop its approach to allow you to pass. It's just sort of a safety protocol. So you can have, what we know from the Star Wars films, that the world is populated with droids and, they're out going to do day-to-day tasks. But again, remember, this was something that was supposed to be a feature of, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. And in fact, they just sort of set the stage for it. Do you remember that bit of info where they actually found the original R2-D2 tracks?
Yes, and then they went through Batu on both coasts and marked it up so that it would look like real tracks. It was pretty great.
No, it's a great detail, and I want to stress here. I've been told by a friend at Disney, it's like, there's a reason we're doing this. There's a reason we're doing Sims. There's a reason we're doing the Tales of Galaxy's Edge, and likewise that we're trying this technology out at the Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel. It's like, it's coming to Galaxy's Edge. This sort of stuff will eventually make it into the parks. We just, we want to make people aware that this is at full build out what it will be like. So it's like, okay, if it's a coming attraction, I just hope, it gets here soon.
And it does make sense that Star Wars would be the vessel where they would try this cutting edge technology. I mean, that's been the history ever since 77.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, as long as we're talking about coming attractions, did you see the video that Electronic Arts dropped for its Star Wars Squadrons game?
I saw it. It's gorgeous. It's compelling, and it made me wish that this was actually going to be an animated series, because wow, the animatics on this thing.
No, it is amazing. It's beautifully staged, and more to the point, have you ever seen a Star Wars story told from this point of view before?
Not that it comes to mind right off the bat. It's really, and it reminds me of the old X-Wing and TIE Fighter games, but this is taking it to a whole other level. I mean, it goes to 11, to quote Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. It beautifully, in fact, I love, for example, the opening shot, the tease of, okay, so yes, here we are with New Hope again. It's like, no, you're not. The camera angle, suddenly flip over entirely, and it's an entirely different, something you haven't been seen before, or more to the point, been in the middle of. And, and it constantly sort of flips the script. I mean, I love that scene where he's, basically hiding in the wreckage, you have the X-Wing kind of creeping in. I mean, it's so beautifully done. And you're right. I would honestly love to see a Star Wars animated series like this. But on the other hand, just to see this out ahead of the game, it makes me that much more excited for when, Star Wars Squadrons, finally goes on sale. What is it? It's October 2nd, right?
Sounds right. Yeah, it's very close.
Okay. But again, I don't know, the thing that kind of, that kind of frustrates me today is the notion of, think about it, we're seeing amazing stuff, done with Star Wars for television. We're seeing, and again, we were just talking about the Star Wars Squadron this short, which by the way is called Hunted, folks. You know, if you want to chase it down, you know, again, just wonderful 6 minute and 58 second, you know, beautiful little chunk of Star Wars. But you know, you look at that, you look at what they're doing, and then you look at what wound up going into the parks with Phase. And by the way, that's the other thing that's kind of interesting about talking with Imagineers right now about, you know, Galaxy's Edge is that, okay, you know, you have to understand this is only Phase One, you know, and, you know, largely this is Phase One is the way it is because, you know, we have things that we need to do in the hotel first before we bring them over to the parks. And then same time, it's just sort of like when you look at the last trilogy and, you know, the story that just broke from Daisy Ridley, which by the way, we'll get to in a moment first, but first got to do a couple ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we are back now, and before we get to the Daisy Ridley story, wanted to we are moving into it's mid-September, folks. It's going to be fall sooner than you know it, and fall means holiday shopping. And I know when none of us are going to the mall the way we used to, but there's a couple of books coming out that particularly Star Wars related books. That Dan and I wanted to make you aware of. And first of all, I want to credit Denise Prescott of Mouse Steps. She was the one who noticed that the Toshin for their 40th anniversary are putting on compact versions of some of their earlier books. And one that Star Wars fans know and love is the Star Wars Archive book. Do you have a copy of this, Dan?
I don't. I remember when it came out, they weren't sending out review copies because it was so expensive, but I've seen some stills and PDFs, and boy, is it gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it's also a behemoth.
It's huge. You know, it's a coffee table.
Well, you could make a coffee table out of this coffee table book. You know, it's an extra, extra large formatted book. Originally went for $200. What's nice about what Toshin is doing for this 40th anniversary edition of the Star Wars Archive, and the full title is 1977-83. They're much more compact format and much more affordable price point. It's going to be just $25. And, you know, just had some amazing stuff from the films, but that drops on December 13th, 2020. Another book that should be on your radar, Star Wars, The Lightsaber Collection. This is from Daniel Wallace. And weren't you saying that Inside Editions just sort of gave you the heads up that they want you to take a look at this? Or
yeah, I'm getting my review copy very soon. Looking forward to it. They are also really cool. They're letting different websites putting out exclusive little images and pages from it. And they let us send out the one of Evan Peele, who's one of the Jedi that actually meets his end in the Clone Wars. But yeah, the detail on this thing, I've always been such a lightsaber aficionado anyway, so I really can't wait to pour into this and get some of the close-ups, especially on what you're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just so this is on your, you know, note this in the calendar, folks, book drops on October 20th. It's going to be $29. Wait a minute, October 20th, that date is familiar for some reason.
Is that when I pick up my dry cleaning? No.
Isn't that when your book is coming out? The Star Wars book, Expand Your Knowledge of a Galaxy Far, Far Away?
That's right. We're hoping to really rack up those pre-orders, so go ahead and jump on it now. I'm telling you what, when people get a hold of the Star Wars book and they see the essays and the time that myself, Pablo Hidalgo, and Cole Horton put into this thing, it's going to generate a whole lot of conversation.
okay, I'm putting on notice. I have pre-ordered my copy, and once I get it, I am sending it to you, Dan, and I want a proper signature.
Of course.
You know, I don't know if you heard about what happened with myself and Drew with his, you know, Art of Pixar's Onward book. Evidently, Drew was being chased by a bear, you know, when he filled out his autograph. I think he might have been holding the pen in his teeth.
Oh, so, was it sloppy?
maybe he let Nova do it. You know,
that probably would look nicer.
But I actually just sent him. I paid to send him the book. I included a Sharpie.
that's really charming of you. I think
put a proper, I want a proper author signature in this book.
Yes, yes. So. Well, we kid because we love, but Drew's great. I love his book, and that's actually a good idea. I should do the same thing.
Okay, well, just putting on notice, expect the box with the Sharpie and the prepaid mailer and all that.
It'd be my pleasure.
All right. Anyway, we were talking about what Daisy Ridley revealed recently. And
before we jump into that, can we really quickly, this is sort of breaking news, at least the time it's recording. By the time people hear this, so everyone will know. But at the time of this recording, The Mandalorian has won 5 Emmys so far.
That's for the technical awards, right?
That's right. They won one for outstanding production design. They won one for, they won one for outstanding sound editing. They got one for outstanding sound mixing, one for outstanding cinematography, and one for special visual effects. Now, some of these are for certain episodes. Most of them seem to be centered on chapters 1 and 2. But boy, what a wonderful thing.
Well, you know, and again, any of us who watch the Disney Gallery, the Mandalorian, docuseries on Disney Plus, you know, I mean, there's so much cutting edge stuff that they did. And it's honestly nice to see them get recognition for this. So, what do I know? Thanks for bringing that to our attention. And going to be interesting marching into this weekend to see, which acting awards they take home. Speaking of acting and actors, Daisy Ridley was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, which Jimmy had been taking a break. So Josh Gad, who Daisy had worked with on the Murder on the Orient Express film, the Kenneth Branagh of reboot of it.
Yes.
By the way, somebody somewhere really has to write a comedy that Josh Gad and Daisy Ridley should do together, because they so enjoy each other's company. I mean, have you seen that video of? I think it dropped just in the past day or so, that it's the two of them out doing press for Murder on the Orient Express, and it's Josh doing his Hercule Poirot impression.
Hercule Poirot, it's so good. When that came out and he was trying to basically get secrets from her about The Last Jedi, and they were interviewing all the members of the cast, and JJ was there in the trailer, and it was just an absolute blast. They do have wonderful chemistry, and of course, Josh is your close personal friend anyway.
Well, Mr. Gad is a great guy, and it has made an appearance or so on the show. And hi, Ava.
He's the best. He really is.
Anyway, so Josh, and again, it's interesting, that you mentioned that there was that running gag of Josh trying to get Star Wars related secrets out of Daisy, because finally on this episode of the Jimmy Kimmel Show, she dropped a fairly sizable one that, I'm going to read the quote here that, and this is talking about, Rey's, potential parentage. All right. So when they started working on the first film on The Force Awakens, at the beginning, there was, again, this is Daisy talking, there was toying with an Obi-Wan connection. There were different versions. Then it really went that it was no one, and then it was dedicated time to episode 9, and JJ pitched me. It's like, okay, Palpatine is your grandfather. And then 2 weeks later, as they're making the film, well, we're not so sure. So it kept changing. So even as we were filming, I wasn't quite sure what the answer was going to be. And so what do you make of this? You know, and thinking back to The Force Awakens, that, you know, they were potentially planting the seeds that Obi-Wan was Rey's grandfather.
I think there's a lot of important variables that are going to play for this. And you and I know that over the course and the history of cinema and storytelling, just the creative process in general, things go through different drafts. They go through different processes. And what you're getting at the end of Act 3 isn't always what was the intention in Act 1. That is normal, however. Mm-hmm. I mean, Darth Vader wasn't going to be Luke's father until well after A New Hope was in the can and was the juggernaut that it was. Luke and Leia were not brother and sister until Return of the Jedi was being created. That wasn't even a thing throughout The Empire Strikes Back. And yet no one seemed concerned about that. Of course, if social media were a thing back then, I'm sure it would be a different story. And I made no secret over the past, you know, 9-10 months that I don't love that Rey is a Palpatine. I found it a little bit forced and unnatural, and there weren't any necessary steps there to indicate that that was a logical way to go in the story. You know, that being said, that's what they did. That was the answer. I'm not going to sign petitions or get all upset about it because that's just how it ended up. And She mentioned something, you know, that we're talking about that you mentioned. She said they toyed with the idea of her being a Kenobi, which, you know, coffee with Kenobi. Hello. Would I have liked it better? Yes, I would have loved it. I thought it would have been great. It would have made more sense. However, there's one really huge problem about this, and that would mean that the Kenobi family would be another in the line of absentee fathers in Star Wars. And I'm not sure that's such a great thing. I mean, Han Solo certainly could be accused of that, being in and out all the time. I don't have to tell you the story of Anakin Skywalker as a father. And, you know, this would just be another one. So it really wouldn't make much sense there. So all she did was say, they toyed with it, and then people went crazy, and, oh, they retconned and this. And no, they didn't. That's called storytelling. And when people say that, you know, why don't they have one person that's in charge and blah, 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 and they have a creative vision, you know, I wasn't there, and certainly no one else was there besides the people who are working on the film themselves. Look at Marvel, for example. Yes, Kevin Feige is the one in charge, like Kathleen Kennedy, but he lets the individual storytellers tell their stories. And that's just kind of how it went. Whether I like it or not, I mean, I guess it's sort of irrelevant. That's just kind of what happened. I don't know. I could certainly talk about it a lot. And we did this week on Coffee with Kenobi. We did an entire show about it. Because as much as I wish that was the case, at the end of the day, I don't have this notion that I'm entitled to anything. Because I like it one way doesn't mean that's the way it's supposed to be.
No, I get that. I get that. But honestly, you just took the legs out from under my big argument about, you know, I was about to launch into this thing where it's like, well, George wrote the Journal of the Wills, and, you know, they had the outline for 12 different Star Wars films, and you knew exactly where the story was going to go, and then you told the story about how Darth Vader wasn't really the dad, you know, while they were shooting New Hope, or for that matter, you know, it wasn't until they were writing originally Revenge of the Jedi.
That's right.
That Luke and Leia were brother and sister. So it's like, thanks, Dan. Okay, I had a really good argument here.
Well, you can still present it. And other people, and you were mentioning something about Gone with the Wind. I think you should talk about here too.
Well, not Gone with the Wind, but Casablanca. But yeah, Casablanca. It is kind of the quintessential story of, you know, that line I love from Raiders so much. I'm making this up as I go along. Casablanca was based on an unproduced stage play. Everybody Comes to Rick's. The Warner Brothers picked up the rights to it in 1942, and they wanted to make it a Humphrey Bogart vehicle. And so they hire Julius and Philip Epstein. And they start working on the script, but they then step away from working on the screenplay to go work with Frank Capra. He was putting together his Why We Fight series, which was supposed to be shown to the folks at home to explain, you know, that, why are we, you know, partnering with Russia to go after Germany and Japan? And it's like, well, let me explain this to you. So Howard Koch steps in and begins working on the screenplay. But a month later, the Epsteins come back and they actually start shooting, you know, Casablanca in late May of 1942. But again, now at this point, you know, you have the, you know, pages from the original stage play. You have the Epstein's first draft, which has then been massaged by Howard Koch. And then they come back. And, you know, but at the same time, the studio's like, we want to shoot this now. We want to shoot, you know, this romance, you know, set against World War II, you know. And so every day when the cast came to the set, there were new pages because the Epsteins had been writing overnight. And it was, you know, they are literally midway through the movie. And it's like, well, all right, is, you know, Ilsa going to go with, you know, Bogart's character? Or, or is she going to stay with her husband, you know, the freedom fighter? And it's like, I don't know, come back tomorrow, you know. And they didn't actually resolve this till, you know, the day they shot that scene. And, you know, and it then became this beloved film. You know, actually, and to give you some idea of what a rush job, they finished shooting this thing on August 3rd, 1942. They held the premiere on November 26th. So what is that? You know, 3 months? Yeah. You know, they're able edit together, you know, that amazing musical score that, you know, that we all know and love today. And it didn't go into wide release till January. But again, you know, this was another one where it's like, you know, does she stay with him? Does she go off with her freedom fighter husband? I don't know. So the fact that, you know, Ray was a Kenobi, Ray was a Palpatine, we don't know. Let's be honest here. Some of this really does have to do with you know, what happened, you know, JJ, then Rian Johnson, then JJ again. But let's also be honest here. A lot of stuff was out of Lucasfilm's control. I mean, when we lost Carrie, you know, right after they finished shooting The Last Jedi, you know, that changed the plans for not only that film, but the film that followed. In fact, it wasn't initially the plan that, what was it? Force Awakens is, you know, Harrison heavy film. Last Jedi was going to be, you know, was Mark. And then finally, the last part of the trilogy was supposed to be, you know, Carrie's starring. Right.
That's right. It was supposed to be her focus, her story, and she was really excited about it too. Who knows what could have happened? It would have been wonderful to see.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So long story short, again, you know, it was wonderful that they, in fact, more to the point, it was wonderful after all of that film footage of Josh Gad, you know, sneaking into, you know, Daisy's trailer and hectoring her for info on Star Wars movies, for her to actually share, you know, a Star Wars story like this. But seriously, somebody needs to write something that you know, and beyond the two of them being in an ensemble cast like Murder on the Orient Express. It's just, I would love to see the two of them in something. They're just so much fun together.
They're a great team. They clearly have a sincere affection for each other, like brother and sister. And yes, it's they're a very charming pair, and it's, I think Daisy had mentioned that she really hadn't gotten any auditions since The Rise of Skywalker, which is sort of crazy. But it's also crazy to me that the gentleman who played Aladdin in the live action Aladdin wasn't able to get any work either. That seems insane as well.
On the other hand, you know, it seems like every time I turn around, Josh Gad is in something else. I mean, did you, for example, just this past weekend, they did that table read for The Princess Bride?
I didn't see it, but I heard you talking about it on Fine Tuning.
Yeah, he did. The interesting thing is Josh was cast as Fezzik, you know, that Andre the Giant, you know, passed away in the early 90s. So he obviously couldn't take part in this table read. And what was fascinating about what Josh did is he did this wonderful homage to the way that Andre had played Fezzik. You know, it wasn't a question of let me put my own spin on this. It was let me be faithful to what Andre did. And it was amazing to watch him right alongside Mandy Patinkin, who was, you know, just, you know, his Diego Montoya. I mean, again, it's been 30 some odd years since they did the film, and Mandy was just as intense, just as, you know, you killed my father, prepare to die. You know, it was so enjoyable. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was a virtual table read, and there were some technical issues and, you know, mics that didn't come on at the right time. But Josh was so much fun. And likewise, just seeing, you know, having the cast come back, and the weird thing is it was a strong enough story that it still held together with people, you know, all over the country, you know, sitting in front of their computers, reading off script pages, and really made me want to see, you know, other films try this. You know, it just, in fact, it would be kind of intriguing to, I wonder if they could do this with one of the Star Wars, because face it, they have done at least the first two Star Wars films as radio plays.
That's right. The radio dramas are excellent and mm-hmm. and great fun to listen to. And now that with the Penguin Random House audiobooks that they're doing, like the Dooku Jedi Lost or the Dr. Aphra, mm-hmm. they're kind of getting into those waters again.
Well, I get we live in interesting entertainment times. But of course, you know, you talk about this stuff over at Coffee with Kenobi, and now you were just mentioning that you just did a a full length show about what Daisy revealed, right?
Yes, I had Holly Fry from Full of Sith and countless other podcasts, and Amira Martin, who runs Four Hats and Frugal and is a big Disney blogger and was in the Target Row One commercial with me. We talked about the nature of storytelling and the conversation about fan entitlement and how stories sort of work and what would it mean to sort of how it did impacted if Rey were in fact a Kenobi, or is it really better that she was a nobody? And I will give you a bit of a tease on that. We all agree that her being a nobody was the best, but mm-hmm. of course that was not to be, and that's okay. We talk about sort of how to make peace with that and really kind of focus on things that actually are a bit more important, especially with the state of the world these days. And then on our Patreon page, CWK Pourover, members of the CWK Alliance get to hear us this week talk about our top five favorite action figure lines. And we had a great time unearthing sort of our treasure chests of all of our collections over the years.
Wow. Okay. Are you familiar with it's a Netflix series, The Toys That Made Us?
Oh, yes. They're wonderful. I love those.
Yeah. You know, I have to admit, I learned so much about, the world of action figures and, you know, what goes into it from those shows. So five, your five favorite action figures.
Yeah. Favorite action figure lines. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Was fun. This one I have to listen to. I really want to know what that would be like. And classic and modern, or
yes, and anything. Most of mine end up being from the 70s and 80s, of course, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, some my other hosts had some more modern ones as well.
Okay, all right, that I have to check out. But speaking of other stuff we'd like you to check out, folks, our side of the street, if you could go give a listen to Disney Different Glenn Testa. Likewise, our good close social friend, Drew Taylor. He and I do the Fine Tuning Show. Let's see. I also do Marvelous Disney with Aaron Adams, the gentleman who comes at a machete with all the podcasts that I do and tries to remove the 1,500 ums. Let's see. We also have Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse. We just got a new episode of that out the door. I am prepping. In fact, that's why I was at the Disney store looking at all of the defect. We'll save that for the next time, Dan. But I was looking at all of the Star Wars Halloween costumes and genuinely kind of feeling bad because, you know, we have places like California that have decided to cancel Halloween this year. And it just sort of, you know.
We got to get creative. We got to get creative.
I guess so. But I have to admit, the they had some amazing, they had a wonderful Mandalorian Halloween costume. Likewise, a really spiffy Kylo Ren. And it's just sort of like, it would be nice to see these out in the world. But yeah, we'll be talking about those on the I Want That podcast with Shelley Viaud-Delide when she feels a little bit better. Anyway, folks, tell you what, if you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to iTunes and not only rate the show you're listening to right now, looking at Livisom, but also Coffee with Kenobi, that would be incredibly helpful. Likewise, if you really, really, really like what you heard tonight, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that'll make it possible to buy the 40th anniversary version of the Star Wars archive, 1977 to 1983. You know, not necessarily the original $200 version, but, you know, again, we appreciate everything that helps. All right. And Dan, you were mentioning earlier on tonight that, you know, you were sharing, with your friends and fans on social media, the what General Mills had sent along, your Mandalorian cereal box. But
yes,
where else can folks find you in the social media sphere?
Sure. Well, the easiest way is Twitter at Mr. Zer, M-R-Z-E-H-R, Coffee with Kenobi is on all kinds of social media, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, you know, the usual places. If you want to email me and ask me anything about Star Wars or ask me about my upcoming book, you can email me danz@coffeewithkenobi.com. And I always forget to mention this, but I have my own website called danzmedia.com. If you are looking to build your brand or start a podcast or blog, let me know and I'd be happy to help.
Very cool. Okay. Our side of the fence, Nancy wants me to tell you that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Jim Hill Media and on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. And okay, folks, so I guess that's going to do it for tonight. But again, just want to point out, it's 6 weeks and change now till, we get season two, or at least the first episode of The Mandalorian. And so go look at that trailer. Just again, just very interesting things.